So if you've got your Bibles there, open to 1 Samuel 17. I'm now going to invite up Noah, and he's going to read for us verses 1 to 54. And as we read along, I want you to pay attention to the little details and ask yourself, why are these details significant? So Noah, come on up.
Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Soko, which belongs to Judah, and encamped between Soko and Azekah in Ephesdamim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and encamped in the valley of Elah, and drew up in line of battle against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with a valley between them. And there came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a helmet of bronze on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs, and a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. And his shield bearer went before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why have you come out to draw up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves, and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man, that we may fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David was the son of an Ephrathite of Bethlehem in Judah, named Jesse, who had 8 sons. In the days of Saul, the man was already old and advanced in years. The 3 oldest sons of Jesse had followed Saul to the battle, and the names of his 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and next to him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 eldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. For 40 days the Philistine came forward and took his stand, morning and evening. And Jesse said to David his son, "Take for your brothers an ephah of this parched grain and these 10 loaves, and carry them quickly to the camp to your brothers. Also take these 10 cheeses to the commander of their 1,000. See if your brothers are well, and bring some token from them." Now Saul and they and all of the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. And David rose early in the morning, and left the sheep with the keeper, and took the provisions and left, as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the encampment as the host was going out to the battle line, shouting the war cry. And Israel and the Philistines drew up for battle, army against army. And David left the things in charge of the keeper of the baggage, and ran to the ranks and went and greeted his brothers. As he talked with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, came up out of the ranks of the Philistines and spoke the same words as before. And David heard him. All the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were much afraid. And the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches, and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel." And David said to the men who stood by him, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him in the same way, "So shall it be done to the man who kills him." Now Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spoke to the man. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, "Why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your presumption and the evil of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle." And David said, "What have I done now? Was it not but a word?" And he turned away from him towards another and spoke in the same way, and the people answered him again as before. When the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, "You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he has been a man of war from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God." And David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." Then Saul clothed David with his armor. He put a helmet of bronze on his head and clothed him with a coat of mail. And David strapped his sword over his armor. And he tried in vain to go, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, "I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them." So David put them off. Then he took his staff in his hand and chose 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. And the Philistine moved forward and came near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with a sword and spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." When the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David quickly ran towards the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. There was no sword in the hand of David. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and Judah arose with a shout and pursued the Philistines as far as Gath and the gates of Ekron, so that the wounded Philistines fell on the way from Shaaraim as far as Gath and Ekron. And the people of Israel came back from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their camp. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. As soon as Saul saw David go out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this youth?" And Abner said, "As your soul lives, O king, I do not know." And the king said, "Inquire whose son the boy is." And as soon as David returned from the striking down of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul, with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" And David answered, "I am the son of your servant, Jesse the Bethlehemite."
All right, so as I mentioned before, that face-off between David and Goliath, it's a mismatch of epic proportions. But did you notice in the story that there's actually a series of mismatches? Now, the first of these mismatches is between Goliath and Saul. And as we'll see, it is a mismatch of epic proportions. Now, this whole chapter 17, is set against the backdrop of yet another skirmish between the Philistines and Israel. If you look at verses 1 to 3, they give us a great amount of detail about the location of this battle. The action of this battle is centered on the Valley of Elah. We're told that the Philistines have moved into the territory which belongs to Judah, one of the tribes of Israel. And we see that the two armies are encamped on mountains that lie on opposite sides of the valley. Now, what's so significant about this valley, the Valley of Elah? Well, here's a little geography lesson about the land of Canaan. The Philistines inhabit the coastal plains to the west, near the Mediterranean Sea. This the coastal plains are flat, right? You can see the terrain there is a bit flatter, you might be able to see. Whereas the Israelites are inhabiting the sort of right-hand side, the hill country to the east, nearer to the Jordan River and the Dead Sea. And so you know, think about coastal plains, hill country. The Valley of Elah is the entry point from the coastal plains into the hill country. And so if the Philistines could secure this valley, their armies would have much easier access to invade the rest of Israel's territory. They don't have to climb up mountains and down mountains. They can just march through the valley. But if the Israelites could successfully defend this valley, then it would make further Philistine incursions very difficult. All right, so that's the strategic significance of the Valley of Elah. The other important thing about this valley is that it created a bit of a standoff between the two armies. So you kind of imagine the Philistine camp is on the mountain on one side of the valley, the Israelites are on a mountain on the other side of the valley. Whichever army enters the valley first will be at a disadvantage. As Star Wars has taught us, whoever has the high ground wins the fight. And so out steps a champion from the camp of the Philistines. You see that in verse 4. Now, in English, we use the word champion to mean winner, the winner of a fight or the winner of a competition. But the word here means the man in between. And he's probably labeled as such because he's the one who steps in between the battle lines. So this Philistine champion is the one who steps in between the two armies. To resolve this standoff, this Philistine in-between man steps into the valley and challenges Israel to send their own in-between man, and whoever wins in a fight between these two champions would win the battle on behalf of their army. Now, if you look there in verse 4, notice the details given to describe this Philistine champion. Verse 4 tells us that his name is Goliath, and he's from Gath, a Philistine city. And it also tells us the most well-known detail about him, which is his height. There was a bit of shade thrown against me that Goliath was double my height. It's actually disputed about how tall Goliath is. He could be 6'9", or he could be 9'6". So he might be almost double my height, or he could be just a little bit taller than me. But either way, he's over 2 meters tall, all right? You know, I don't know how tall 2 meters is. It's too high for me. But if he's over 2 meters tall, it means he's probably taller than Saul. And if you remember, Saul is already a head taller than everyone else. So here's this man. He's tall. He's taller than Saul, who is taller than everyone else. But that's all in verse 4. There's so much more detail given in verses 5 and 6, particularly about what Goliath is wearing. Have a look at verses 5 and 6 here. All right, cast your eyes over the description, right? There's a very detailed description of his armor. You kind of get the sense that if this was an RPG, like Goliath has fully upgraded all his armor. He's collected the matching set. He's got all the weapons ready to go. He's got the set boosters and stuff like that. The idea is that this is not a guy that you want to be messing with. Now, if you're an Israelite listening to this description, and if you're listening to it in the Hebrew language, there's actually another layer to this description. You see, the word bronze in the description sounds very similar to the word for snake. Yeah, look how many times bronze turns up in the description. And the coat of mail there, another meaning it could have is a coat of scales. So here's this bronze armored coat of armor of scales man. This description of Goliath gives off serpent vibes, as in the serpent in the Garden of Eden. Goliath here represents the great enemy of Israel, and indeed the great enemy of God. And just to cap that off, he confirms that he is the great enemy of God when he says, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day." This is a description of Goliath. Contrast this with the description of Israel's champion, or rather the absence of Israel's champion. Because you see, you'd expect King Saul at this point to be Israel's champion. He is the king after all, right? But the narrative doesn't pay much attention to him. Yeah, notice how when we've read the previous chapters in 1 Samuel, it's very clear that the army that is being commanded is Saul's army. Saul is the one who's leading the army to go up against the Philistines. He is clearly the leader in the previous chapters. But in this chapter, Saul is presented as just one of the men of Israel. And when Goliath issues his challenge for a champion to step out, how does Saul respond? He doesn't step out to meet the challenge. Instead, verse 11, he cowers in fear, just like every other man in the Israelite army. You see, Goliath's challenge sets up the big, and Saul's lack of response sets up the big question of this story. Who will step up to fight and overcome the enemy? Who will step up to fight and overcome the enemy? And the answer we get from these first 11 verses is not Saul. In the matchup between Goliath and Saul, the contrast is clear. So if it's not going to be Saul, who's it going to be? Well, the next mismatch is between Saul and David. And in verse 12, the narrative very clearly shifts its focus on to David. It even swings, pans away from the Valley of Elah and shifts the scene to Bethlehem. And as the narrative shifts its focus on to David, the details that the narrative gives makes it very clear that David is not like Saul. We're gonna go a little bit more brief over these details, but here's what we learn from the details. Have a look there, verse 12. David is the eighth son of Jesse. And David has obviously seven other brothers. His three eldest brothers are in the Valley of Elah with Saul. Given that only three of the eight sons are in battle and that David is the youngest, if you do the math, we learn that David is far too young to fight in the army. Next slide, please. David is far too young to fight in the army. Instead, David's job is to help feed his father's sheep and to run supplies and messages between the Israelite camp and his home in Bethlehem. And while he goes back and forth, as David is doing that, he's doing his sort of errand job, Goliath is repeating his challenge to the Israelite army every morning and evening for 40 days. So this is kind of happening for 40 days. And then in verse 17, the narrative zooms in on one particular day. Now, David is obediently carrying out his usual routine. He gets out of bed. He leaves the sheep with the keeper. The narrative goes into so much detail about the mundane aspects of his day. He gets out of bed early, leaves the sheep with the keeper, takes the grain, the loaves, the cheeses, and he sets out to the camp. These ordinary chores reinforce that David is an ordinary and dutiful son of a shepherd. And yet something is different about him. Because when he arrives at the camp this time he hears the war cry. Instead of running back to Bethlehem like I would, he quickly drops the supplies with the keeper of the baggage, and he rushes to the front lines to find his brothers. And just as an aside, notice the contrast here with Saul, who in chapter 10 is found hiding amongst the baggage, and in chapter 11 is found very far away from the front lines of the battle. David leaves the things with the bags, rushes to the front lines. And as Goliath has done for the past 40 days, he comes out again. He repeats his challenge to Israel to send a champion. And in doing so, he defies the armies of Israel. But this time, when Goliath issues his challenge, there is one difference. And it turns out to be the turning point in this battle. Have a look at the end of verse 23. David heard him. And when he does, David responds differently to every other Israelite. You see, for 40 days, the men of Israel have fled in fear and they tried to egg each other on to offer themselves as Israel's champion. You know, did you hear that Saul promised that there'd be a substantial reward for anyone who would go and be the champion and kill Goliath? That, you know, they're spreading that rumor maybe as a way to, you know, I don't want to go. You go, you know. But what does David do? David challenges that attitude. He exclaims that an uncircumcised Philistine dares to mock the armies of the living God. You know, while all the other Israelites are trying to egg each other on to go and, you know, not be the one to be the champion, David is like, this guy has offended God. You see, David recognizes what this battle is really about. This is not just a Philistine champion challenging the servants of Saul. This is a pagan enemy openly defying the one true living God. Now, upon hearing David's challenge, his eldest brother in verse 28, Eliab, he scolds David. You know, he accuses him of being disobedient, of being presumptuous, of being motivated by evil. But the details we've already seen make it very clear that David is not any of those things. You know, the reason he's on this battlefield is because he's listened to what his father has told him to do. The details have already vindicated David from these false accusations. And so David is actually behaving exactly as he ought to be. In fact, he is behaving more appropriately than anyone else in the Israelite camp. He's behaving more appropriately than anyone else in the Israelite camp, including Saul. And when David is brought before Saul, David does what no one else, including Saul, has done for the past 40 days. He offers himself as Israel's champion. And when Saul questions David's age and his battle experience, David counters that he has had plenty of experience to protecting his sheep. But David clarifies that it's not his experience that it is motivating him. Rather, if you see there in verse 37, it's his experience of God delivering him each time that motivates him to trust that God will likewise deliver him from the one who has defied the living God. And his refusal to wear Saul's armor is further proof of this trust. And I don't know if you noticed as we read the passage. I actually noticed this when we read this passage. Like, Saul tried to dress David in bronze armor, in bronze scale armor. You know, the symbolism is clear. He refuses to wear that. He's got to trust in God. He's not going to enter the battlefield dressed like Saul. He's not going to enter the battlefield dressed like Goliath or looking like a serpent. Instead, he puts up his hand to fight, trusting that God will deliver him. Now, the narrative has invested a lot of detail into demonstrating that David is not like Saul. Unlike Saul, David is young, he's small, he's ordinary. He does not belong on the battlefield. And yet, unlike Saul, David is not afraid. David is willing to fight because he is rightly motivated by the enemy's defiance against God, and he rightly trusts that God will deliver him. The mismatch between Saul and David makes it clear that David is going to be the one who will step up and fight. And so we enter the third and final act of the story. This is the part in the movies where you have the big, epic fight scene. The whole movie is gearing up to this point. And as David approaches Goliath, the mismatch is clear. Just the height difference will show you. And just like any good final act fight scene, there's some important dialogue that happens between the two opponents before they get in. You see, Goliath sees the champion that Israel has sent, a young, ruddy, and handsome shepherd boy. And Goliath is insulted. And he looks at David, and in his arrogance, he thinks the fight is already won. He says to David, I'm going to feed you to the birds. I'm going to feed you to the beasts. In other words, Goliath is saying, you're as good as dead. Clearly, Goliath thinks that this battle will be a mismatch of epic proportions. But then David speaks. And we quickly realize that David is on a completely different playing field. Have a look in your Bibles from verse 45. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the hosts of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. Do you see how this story answers its own question? Who will step up to fight and overcome the enemy? Yes, David is the champion, but ultimately, the battle belongs to the Lord. He will deliver the enemy into the hand of his anointed champion and give him the glorious victory. You see, this battle is a mismatch of epic proportions. But it's not because it's a battle between David and Goliath. It's a battle between Goliath and the one true living God of the universe. So you can go ahead and cross out David in your outline and write God. And as soon as David reveals this in his speech, we know that the battle is already won. We don't need to see what action unfolds. We know that it's going to happen. And in fact, the action ends just as soon as it begins. David shoots a stone at Goliath's forehead. Goliath falls flat on the ground. David takes Goliath's own sword and cuts off his head. You know, if you're watching this in a movie, you'd be disappointed. Like, I came to see an epic choreographed fight scene. It's just 2 seconds, done. The fight is disappointingly short. But then again, what do you expect when someone as weak as Goliath goes up against the God of the universe? So there you have it, the story of David and Goliath in all its rich detail. What are we to make of this story? Well, in the context of 1 Samuel, this story begins to demonstrate why David and his kingship will be the way forward for Israel. He is clearly a much better king than Saul. Not because of what can be seen of David with human eyes, but because of what can be seen of David with God's heart. And what we've seen is that David is rightly against those who defy and defile God. And he rightly trusts that God will deliver him. Saul was the king that Israel chose, but David is the king that God has chosen. In the context of the bigger biblical drama of salvation, this story hints to us how it is that God will save his people. The snake armor of Goliath directs our imaginations towards the true enemy of humanity, sin. And how does God overcome this enemy? He delivers his anointed champion and grants him victory. victory. And so this story ultimately points us to Jesus, the descendant of David who steps in between us and sin and descends into the valley of death on our behalf. As our champion, he was anointed with oil for his burial. And then he was crucified, died, and was buried in a tomb. And for 3 days, it seemed like sin and Satan had won the victory. Death had defied the champion of the living God. But this was a mismatch of epic proportions. Because just as God delivered Goliath into the hand of his champion David, so he delivered death into the hand of Jesus by raising him victorious from the grave. In his resurrection, Jesus demonstrates that he truly is the Son of the living God. I mean, how much more living can you be than resurrecting from the dead? Death no longer has a hold on him. Sin has been defeated. Death has been swallowed up in victory. The story of David and Goliath isn't meant to represent the idea of overcoming adversity against all odds. You know, that if you have enough courage, then perhaps maybe you will triumph as the underdog against the giants of your life. No, this story is meant to demonstrate that the battle against sin and death belongs to the Lord. And so it's not about hoping against all hope. It's about a sure and certain hope, because sin and death are no match for the living God and his resurrected champion. And so this story is meant to give us confidence. Confidence that victory over sin and death is ours as well, because God has given it to us through our risen Lord Jesus Christ. So if that's the case, what does this passage have to say about overcoming adversity in our life? Well, I think this passage reminds us that if we try and battle on our own, if we try and muster up the courage to overcome the adversity, we will just end up just like Saul and the men of Israel. You see, all adversity in life ultimately comes from the curse of sin and from the shadow of death. And if we try to overcome sin and death, if we try to overcome the enemy on our own, we'll be left to feel dismayed over our sin and greatly afraid over our death. But this passage also reminds us that we can be sure that God saves us from sin because he delivered his anointed champion Jesus by raising him from the dead. And so if we trust that the living God will deliver us, if we trust in the risen Lord Jesus, then victory over sin and death is already ours. And no longer do we need to feel dismayed over our sin, because the resurrection of Jesus gives us confidence that God has indeed forgiven our sins. And it gives us confidence that God will deliver us from this sinful world soon. No longer do we need to be afraid of death, because the resurrection of Jesus gives us confidence that we too will be raised from the dead, which means that we can face the overwhelming adversity in our lives, knowing that they will never truly overcome us, because we already have the victory. We have the victory of the resurrection to look forward to. To close, let's reflect on the lyrics of the song that we're about to sing. Death was once my great opponent. fear once had a hold on me. But the Son who died to save us rose that we would be free indeed. What a glorious and precious truth to celebrate this Resurrection Sunday.